Hey everybody, this is Lieutenant Joe Pangaro here with the Neighborhood Fellas, and we're back. The new year is here and we're ready to go, so we would like to say hello to everybody. Jack, lead us off.
Hello.
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 Hello. Are we having fun out there? Listen to Chasing Justice every day at 3 p.m. I'm Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Chasing Justice here on the America Out Loud Radio Network. I'm Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, your host, and I'm here today for a lengthy period of time with the gentleman in the neighborhood. Now, everybody's been gone for holidays, Jim. You're all tanned up, look like you've been in Florida. I bet you've been in Florida. Bill, I know you were in church, in multiple churches. You were doing a lot of church things. Jack, you were racing or putting up a tree or doing something. We've all been busy, and I've missed all of you guys. So I'm glad you're all here, and I want to have some time with the neighborhood fellas today. So welcome aboard, Jack.
Hey, Joe. It's great to be back.
Excellent.
How you doing, Joe? I've been very busy, like you said, but I am glad to be here with you guys today.
It's excellent, Bill. James?
Great holiday season. I'm glad I'm back here in January in the freezing weather.
It's excellent. For those of you who don't know, here in the Northeast, we call this the gray suck because it's gray and it's not fun. So I'm glad the neighborhood, everybody here is back together again. So a lot has gone on since the Christmas break. You know, I've said in a couple of shows, and I didn't have you fellas, I was all alone here, is that I'm trying to take Bill's approach and I'm trying to be more positive. You know, our man of faith tells us to be positive and look forward. America is going to do the right thing. Our people are going to come through. But we have a brand new Congress. We have a brand new Congress who are not exactly what you would consider to be pro-American in everything that they do. So I'm going to pose a little question to the group to get this started. Gentlemen, I need you to give me some facts, some absolute facts that everybody knows are absolutely true, and I'm going to make a point. Jack, you have a fact, something everybody knows to be true.
The sun comes up in the morning.
Okay.
Sky is blue.
The moon circles the earth.
So those are your facts.
That's the facts.
Well, guess what? As the leader of Chasing Justice here, I reject your facts.
Okay, great. So the earth is flat, socialism works, and Nancy Pelosi is not the enemy of the state.
I reject your facts completely. That statement is pretty funny because I actually saw an exchange the other day with the new Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, which this is the second time she's having a tenure as Speaker of the House. And she was talking to a member of the Trump administration about their concerns and the need for a wall on the southern border. And the Republican spokesman from the administration was going on and on about why we needed it, and she says, I want to hear from Homeland Security. So the Secretary of Homeland Security comes on and starts to lay out how many people with terrorist ties were captured last year, actually captured, coming across the border, how many tons and tons of drugs that would kill our children were coming across the border, how many people came across that were sick and injured and had disease and all kinds of other problems, when it makes it crystal clear you need to have some kind of a border to stop this flow of bad things that are coming across. That doesn't mean all the people are bad. It means a lot of the things that are happening and coming across the border are detrimental to our country. And the secretary brought those facts up. And Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, listened to her and then said, I reject your facts. Now, the secretary of DHS, I have to say, thought very quickly, and she says, these are not my facts, Madam Speaker. These are the facts. Now, just because you don't like the fact that the facts on the ground point out the need for the wall, doesn't mean that they're not real. So here we are once again with divided government, and we're waiting to see what's going to go on. Now, Bill, I know you've had some commentary about this craziness that we're seeing already, or what do you think, man? What's going on?
Just the fact that that they brought her back just defies any kind of common sense. The very first day she was there, she started to defy President Trump. And what does she do? She starts by helping to get bills passed to open government agencies that were closed because of an impasse over the funding of the wall, the biggest controversial thing going on between the Democrats and the Republicans right now. And then she goes, she also said something that was amazing. She suggested that a sitting president could be impeached. Now, where did that come from? Why does she even bring those things up? But then right away, she adds to that by saying, and I quote, "Our nation is at a historic moment. I pledge that this Congress will be transparent, bipartisan, and unifying." Really? Unifying?
Well, who's going to unify them?
Well, and that we will seek to reach across the aisle in this country and across divisions across our nation. That does not sound like anything that is going to come from any of the Democratic side at all.
Transparent, like when she was sitting in front of Trump with Charles Schumer, and the news media was there, and Trump was posing difficult questions, and what she wanted to do, as well as Charles Schumer, let's take this behind closed doors.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
That doesn't mean transparency.
And what's the purpose of that? That is so that whatever was said in that meeting, and if it wasn't publicized, they could come out and spin it any way they want.
Right.
They could say Trump jumped up and down,
right,
and he had a fit and he pulled his hair out and he's crazy.
They're just going to use it to be divisive.
Exactly. So they didn't like the fact that the news media was there watching these tough questions, as you bring up, Jim, that they had to answer for.
I want to be transparent and say before any of these meetings, the results of any of these meetings are transposed to the public, is to take a look at these people. I'm a realist. I'm a walk a mile in my shoes guy. Do you have a fence in your backyard? Are you opposed to the wall? Then you have to question why you have a fence.
Right.
You have to look at the basis of things. You have to realize that certain people are strictly opposed to anything that our president wants at this time and for the rest of his tenure. They're just going to oppose it, and that in and amongst itself is divisive, and I don't think that Nancy Pelosi has any inkling of how to make the Congress transparent or work together.
Well, you have to figure. Let's look at what they're proposing. Let's take away the craziness of some of the people that we've seen in the first day. Miss Haleeb, is that her name? She's brand new congresswoman, and she comes out talking about a story she had, talking to her young son about her victory, which should have been a wonderful thing in her family. She ran for Congress. She gets elected. She gets to go and represent her community in the United States Congress. What an important thing. And she says, we're going to go right there, we're going to impeach the MF-er. Now, first of all, that's what she says to her young son. That's how she speaks. Here she is, a representative of the United States government, the whole world watching, and this is how she acquits herself? I don't know, Jim, would you use terminology like that?
Well, I do, but I'm not a congressman or a senator. And I don't do that in a public forum because it's decorum. You have a lot of people who listen, and you want to project yourself appropriately.
Absolutely.
It's not something we would even say here in the neighborhood.
No, not when we're talking amongst ourselves. You know, Jack, you and I were talking before, and we're looking at, let's have an open mind. All right, the Democrats have now taken the House of Representatives. They say they want to be transparent. They say they want to reach across the aisle. They say they want to work with the Republicans to make America better. Of the things you've heard that they've proposed so far, which one of these things do you think makes America better? Impeaching the president, raising the tax rate to 70% on high-income earners, socializing medicine, cutting away the powers of the executive office. Which one of those things are good for America?
Obviously none. Going back to this woman who was just elected with the vulgar speeches, the thing that strikes me is, once again, getting down to basics, getting down to brass tacks. Every time this person's name happens to be mentioned in the press, in the media of any sort, the first thing to come before her name is that she is a Muslim. I wonder how our president would be treated if every time he announced someone who had said something, he was to announce what religion they were.
Right.
How he would be declared a racist, or anti-God, or pro-God, or whatever it is that they wish to construe as anti-American. Yeah.
Well, let's look at that for a minute. Let's take it. We got four guys here sitting to look at this. The media mentions that. Now, it is new. It is new. They are the first people of Muslim faith to maybe be in our Congress. They might not be the exact first, but this is exciting. Really, you got people, you got more diversity in a world where we value that. Now you have people who have never been representative in the Congress. That in and of itself should be an exciting thing, a great thing. Does the media mention it to make it exciting, or do they mention it to throw it in the face of conservatives who are concerned about what's going on with our jihadi friends? Are they trying to play a game and they're trying to trigger people, or are they getting you to say something bad?
First of all, what about the Muslim community hearing her speak that way? How are they going to feel?
Right.
I mean, they've got to be embarrassed. They've got to be saying, why did we ever vote her in? If this is the kind of behavior that she's going to be continuing while she's representing us.
Right.
We don't speak like that.
And here's a community that apparently wants to be a part of our country. They want to bring their faith, their traditions, even though it's different for most people. But you know what? They are deep traditions. There's a lot more than just terrorists involved with them. And we want to get to know them and who they are. And here's how we're getting introduced by this first woman.
It's the age-old game. They want to stoke divisiveness. They know that people like me, relative conservatives, I do not like people who are liberal. And to me, that's radical liberalism. But the fact that they're Muslim, now if I was to say anything, all of a sudden I am now a racist. So, and they know there's only people like me who would project, I don't like this person. This person's a nut. Does not belong in our Congress.
That has nothing to do with her religion.
Has nothing to do with her religion. But she's a Muslim. So now all of a sudden, if I say anything, I am a racist.
That's what I'm saying. Do you think they're using it as a trigger to get someone to say something? Why would you keep it? You don't bring up and say, John Smith was just elected. He's a Protestant from Missouri. They don't say that about the guy.
They want the talking point. That's all they want. They want to be able to use that. And they don't care who says it. As long as they could relate it to Trump.
Right. And that's what I'm saying. Is that the angle for this? I think that's exactly the angle for this. All right, so here on Chasing Justice, we welcome everybody who wants to come and be American. It doesn't matter your faith. We're happy that you have your faith. We'd like to learn about your faith. So welcome aboard. We're not going to take the bait. We like everybody here. All right, so let's look at some of these other things, Jack. What do you think? You and I don't make $10 million each, but we aspire to do so. Isn't that a good thing?
Correct. Everybody does, I think. That's a working person in America. The problem is you have stumbling blocks set out by the government. Realize that when you're young, you want everybody to share and share alike. Realize as you get older and more educated, as it's what happens in a free democracy, in a free society, it can't be that way. You can't and you won't like it if all of your achievements add up to nothing. If you go and you get yourself a college education, if you have a college education or are getting one currently, if you enjoy the fact that you've received an education, realize that under a socialist plan, which is where they're heading, you're not going to be any more rewarded than a sixth grade dropout. That's what it's all going to add up to. And now the federal government is proposing that we place severe, heavy taxation upon the people who make the money. The people who make the money are... Let's not get this wrong. The people who make the money are the people who employ. And if the people who employ no longer see themselves as making enough money, whatever that may be, it's their personal choice, then they're not going to employ as many. And you have a collapse of your social systems. And especially when you're starting to bring in more and more and more people from other nations, what are we supposed to employ them in? We're starting to see retail shrinking. You're starting to see more and more malls, especially in my area. I can speak for myself. There's a lot of retail stores, a lot of retail store spaces going out of business, and or, of course, those that are unfilled and never will be filled because of the internet. We have to find a place to employ all these people. We have to make a great shift in this country. It goes back directly to the wall. If we can control the influx of immigration, not stop it, not choke it, but control it.
Do it legally.
Do it legally as many have. And believe me, if you know somebody who has immigrated here legally, speak to them about what goes on without that wall, mm-hmm. and they'll tell you how upset they are of the process that they had to go through that nobody else seems to have to.
Look at the tragedy with that police officer Singh. Mm-hmm. Here's a man who did everything the right way. He was an immigrant. He came in. He did everything possible to do everything right. He became a police officer. And what happens? He gets knocked off by an illegal immigrant who decided to skip all of that legal way to get into this country. And not only that, but he was already a criminal. So how does he get here? If that wall was there, it may not have stopped him, but it certainly would have hindered the process.
You don't invite somebody into your house party who's just there to drink. He's not there to make friends. He's not there to know you. He's not there to be your neighbor. He's just there to abuse your system. He's there to abuse your home. Well, this is our home. This is America. Don't invite people in to abuse it.
Bill and I take an exception to what you just said.
Because you're here to
love
drink.
To come to
This is the problem in the neighborhood. You get these fellas together, everybody wants a cocktail. Well, I want to talk about Officer Singh real quick for a minute, for the last minute of this round. You know, Bill, you bring up a great point. Here's a young man who came to our country legally. He did everything the right way. And then he decided to pursue a career in law enforcement to protect and serve the rest of his community. He decided to do what he could to make his community a better place. And he goes out on, and the picture that was on the internet was heartbreaking. A couple hours before he was murdered, it was him and his wife and his child at the Christmas tree, and it was really a beautiful picture. And then you find out that, like you said, the man who killed him was an illegal immigrant who had all kinds of problems, who was hiding in a sanctuary city, and he murdered this police officer. And we look and we see this argument. I don't care what they say about, well, the number of people who are killed or injured by illegal immigrants is really very small compared to the overall population. That officer today would be at home with his wife and his child right now, looking forward to 2019, if we didn't have this illegal immigration and people pouring over these borders. He would be home today. One individual, one human being would still be here if that did not happen, and his life is important. So every one of us could be in that position. What happens when your child gets killed, your spouse, your wife? Well, it's just one life. It's a shame that they're dead. We'll have a nice funeral. Is that what we want? Everybody's life is important in America. Mm. And Officer Singh, we salute you, brother, and we'll take it from here, as they say. We'll be back in a couple minutes, ladies and gentlemen, with round two here on Chasing Justice. We'll get the neighborhood guys talking about some other things that we've been getting ready for you for 2019. So hang on. We'll be right back.
Let the silent voices be heard. It's the rallying call that started it all. AmericaOutloud.com. For a wide spectrum of programming from world and political news, societal and cultural stories, law enforcement, our military heroes, and much more. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to round two. Bing, 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 here on Chasing Justice on the America Out Loud Radio Network. Well, I'm here with the fellas from the neighborhood. We have Rock and Roll Race Car Jack is here. We have Bill, the Man of Faith, and Jim, the Contrarian Giordano here. So we had our first round, and I thought that was a pretty good go-around, talking about some of the political things that are going on new in the world. But we want to talk about something a little more substantive in the neighborhood. Because when you sit around the fire and you have a couple cocktails, sometimes conversation turns to more deeper thoughts. We don't always just sit around and slap each other on the back and say stupid stuff. Sometimes we talk about real things. But the first real thing I want to talk about is how people get along and how people, you know, in this modern age on social media, you know, in social media, everybody's got great big muscles. Everybody's really strong and powerful until they see somebody face to face. Like I recall early in the month of December, here we had some commentary by one of our members here. I think, Jim, I think it was you. I think it was you. You made a comment about Jack, who wasn't here to do a face-to-face piece of the show with you, and Jack wasn't here. I think you called him a chicken. Would you like to speak to Jack face to face now? Bill, could you get the bandages
I'm here now, and the microphone is on. And you, ladies and gentlemen, I care for my friend Bill quite a great deal, and he's in between Jimmy and I right now.
Bill, get the bandages, just in case. Go ahead.
Jack, you fear me. Every big man fears a little guy, because when the little guy kicks the shit out of excuse me, then that's embarrassment. So you fear me.
Wow, that's his point of view. What do you think, Jack? Do you fear him?
I'd have to say, Jim, don't worry. This is only going to hurt a lot.
Well, I'm glad we finally cleared that up there on Chasing Justice, and we hope you forgive us for the inopportune wording by Jim the Contrarian, who says he doesn't use that kind of language till now. All right, so on all seriousness, I wanted to address that because I did get a couple phone calls from people, and an email wanted to know, are they really angry with each other? I said, no, they're not angry with each other. Jim just likes to stir the pot and cause trouble. One of the things that I like to talk about, and I like to see, you know, the older you get in life, I think sometimes you start to look around and you really ask yourself the question, what are we doing here? You know, what is the purpose of being here? You know, we all get so tied up in, you know, going to work every day, getting a better job, and making money, and paying for the bills, and if you have kids, making sure the kids do the right thing. We kind of lose sight of the fact that what is all of this? And it came to me the other day that this would be a good topic, and two things actually came together to bring it together. I saw a comedian, and I don't remember the guy's name, but he was really funny. He was on one of the social media stations, and he's talking about things that don't make sense. And he goes, people are saying things don't make sense. He goes, you know what don't make sense? We're on a rock floating around in the middle of nowhere, and we run around like idiots. We make roads and buildings, and we have jobs, and we come and go. Shouldn't we be doing something else with our time? I mean, how is it that we even got here? What is this? We don't even know there's another living thing in the universe. And here we are, this amazing thing of life. This doesn't make any sense that we're worried about. Can I get 2 hours worth of overtime next week, or should you order pizza with the pepperoni on it? So that, I thought, was really interesting, because I'm searching for those kind of answers. What are we doing here? What is my purpose? I mean, we all got to take care of people, but Joe, is there something bigger? Jim?
It's enshrined in the Constitution, Declaration of Independence, the pursuit of happiness. That is what we're here for.
Happiness.
Isn't that what everybody's goal is? Some people think money makes you happy. Some people think climbing a rock makes you happy. Some people think farming land makes you happy. Making models make you happy. That is what we're here for.
But does that cause you to be content? Because isn't there another rock to climb? Isn't there another dollar to be made?
This is perfect, gentlemen. Perfect lead into what I want to talk about. The second part of what came to me recently over the holidays is my beautiful wife, Kathleen, who is wonderful at bringing up things for us to think about and do the right thing in life. And she told me about Dr. Jordan Peterson. Now, Jordan Peterson has written a lot of books. He's done a lot of TV shows. And he asks a lot of those questions. Well, she got me the book, and I'm looking at it right here, The 12 Rules of Life. I'm about to dig into it really deep. And I think I like the way he talks. I think I like the way he speaks and brings up things. But, Bill, that's exactly what he brings up. Is there a difference? And this is my question to the group and to all of you out there in Chasing Justice Land. Is there a difference between happiness and contentment? Are they the same thing, or are they two different animals? What do you think? Go ahead, Billy.
Well, let me tell you what I believe. I believe that contentment gives real happiness, and here's why. Happiness is a temporary high, whereas contentment, on the other hand, is a longer lasting, a deeper feeling of satisfaction and gratitude for things like spiritual blessings, for people, for relationships. I can quote a scripture in 1 Timothy. It says, but godliness actually is a means of great gain when accompanied by contentment. Mm-hmm. Right? Now, true contentment...
What does godliness
mean? Godliness is acting in according to the way that God wants us to be.
Godliness. Oh, I thought you said beguilingness,
yeah,
too. You stumbled along there. That's it. Okay. Godliness.
So, true contentment, all right? True contentment comes from, for me, a man of faith, comes from accepting Christ and having faith that in him I'll have everything that I need. He's sufficient and his promises are enough for me. But how do I get contentment?
I think that's a good question.
By being grateful. It's impossible to develop any type of contentment without gratitude. They're inseparable.
Interesting. Jack,
give
me a definition of contentment and happiness for you. What is it? What does it mean to you?
You know, there's so many facets to this question. I mean, there's no simple answers to this one. Some people would say satisfaction is the death of desire. And desire is what drives us all. Desire to have more money, have more things, do more things, or spend more time. Those desires.
So you mean if you achieve that?
If you achieve that, your desire would go away, mm-hmm. and you would no longer achieve. Mm-hmm. So we have to figure out where our level of achievement is within ourselves, to figure out where we're heading, and to be satisfied once we get there.
So happiness is what to you?
Happiness is... happiness is that desire. Happiness is getting to that place. Unfortunately, in our society today, it's money. For me, it's been about money. Not on a personal level, but on a professional level, yeah. It's always been about money.
Okay, so what would contentment be then?
Contentment would be to have enough money to not have to worry about money.
Jim, what's your definition?
Actually, I was going to... say before we even had this segment that there's no difference between happiness and contentment until I listened to Bill. And you want to know something? I know the difference now. Thank you, Bill.
You're welcome.
And it's true.
Bill had a great point that satisfaction is the end of desire, to accept what you have and the things that you've done and the time that you're spending.
I think contentment is a state of being. And that state of being is an existence and that you get with God. I agree with that. I was thinking in terms of what Jack was saying, happiness is the pursuit of something. Yes, contentment can be just a state of being, but you want to know something? That's where we really want to be, is just to be happy with what we are, a state of an existence.
Let me wrap that up. By quoting one of my favorite authors, Mark Twain, he had a recipe for contentment. He said, good friends, good books, and a sleepy conscience. This is the ideal life.
Now, it's interesting. I think everyone, all of you guys have your own looks at it. What came to me as I started contemplating this, to think this maybe could be a topic, was I started to look and say, okay, you brought it back to a connection of humanity to God. Okay, that connection to God is really, if you look in the religion, especially in my religious, Christian religion, when I look back, I go, the whole thing is to be connected to God, to live your life, to get home to God eventually, because that is really what happiness and contentment is about. So when you bring that up, that's true. I'm thinking, and I don't want to say in a bigger picture, what about people that don't have that kind of faith? And I think what Dr. Peterson brings up that I find very interesting in the very 30 pages in the beginning of this book is that we look at the overall condition of our world right now. And as we pull away the traditional things that gave us grounding and purpose and connected us to our God, we now have chaos, we have problems, we have strife, we have anger, we have all the negative emotions of humanity are now come to the fore. And our lives are at each other's throats because we're not having happiness and contentment.
And we have unhappiness. You have people, Jack, you have very wealthy people all over the place committing suicide. Yeah. And you, from yours and my perspective, we're like, they had everything.
Right.
So there comes what Bill was trying to say.
What I had said in a previous segment was, I feel that this country has lost their moral compass. And as a result, we're having problems like this, like people committing suicide, like people trying to overachieve. A dollar isn't enough anymore, you know? And if we haven't had that moral compass get skewed, I don't think we'd be in this problem.
You know, the one thing it's not anything that I thought up myself. It's something that I heard a long time ago and something that I'm trying to pass on to my children. I haven't lived by it. I have to be honest. I'm standing next to Bill. You know, it's chase the dream. Don't chase the money. Fulfill yourself. Don't worry about the money. find out what it is that you want, what it is that you love, what it is that gets you up in the morning, what it is that keeps you going and will keep you going for the rest of your life, and find it and follow it.
I like that. And let me throw a couple thoughts out there, because we all heard the old saying, find what you love in life and you never have to go to work, ever. Right? My mother, who was not an educated woman, but she was smart in her own way. And when I was a kid, and I've told you, we didn't have a lot after my father died, and I had some friends who had lots of things. And I was very upset with the plastic ShopRite sneakers I had when my friends had Puma and Converse. I had a 10-speed bike. The English Racer was all big at the time in the 70s. And my friends all had Schwinn's, you know. And I had whatever off-brand was for sale for $35 or somewhere that she could find one at a yard sale or something. And I was always feeling bad that I didn't have those things. And when one time we got into this argument about something I wanted, because my friend had it, and my mother said something to me that has turned out to be really essential to being happy. She said, want what you have, and you'll always be happy. Now, that seems like a very simple thing. Mm. But if you want the things that you have in your life, that you've brought into your life, and you really value them, then you're going to be happy. So I'm trying to figure out my definition of happiness and contentment, because I'm in a unique place right now. My life has changed a lot in the last 6 months, and I'm feeling a contentment that I hadn't felt in a long time. I'm trying to quantify it, and listening to all of you and reading from this book and some other things that I've been looking at are trying to take all these spinning plates and put them into some organization for me. But I look at that and I say, happiness, it is the pursuit of doing that. You're happy doing what you like. Jim, you said climbing a mountain. Some people just love to climb mountains. I know a guy, just every vacation he has, he goes and climbs these stupid mountains. And I say, haven't you climbed them enough? I love getting to the top and seeing it and then climbing back down. That makes him feel good. I know other people that play music and it makes them feel good. I know other people that do business and that makes them good. But contentment, that connection to something bigger. We all have a friend who remain nameless, who I am trying so hard to help him find some kind of happiness so he can find some contentment and a better life and a better job. And I keep trying to tell him, do yourself a favor, man. On a Sunday morning, just go stop into church. Now, I'm not trying to be a holy roller. So go to that church. Every time I go there and I sit there in the pew, something comes up in that service that means something in my life. And it's helped me to focus some of these things. So I'm trying to tell this good friend of mine, dude, stumble on in there. Just sit there and listen. You might hear something that will help you, because that bigger picture of contentment, I think, is really that connection to what we're supposed to be. Jim, you said we're supposed to be happy.
I agree.
What is
wholeheartedly
that?
You can't just go into a church, whatever denomination you're from, and just do the vote thing. You got to really take part, and you really got to think, and it's not just say the prayers, but you got to mean the prayers. You got to try to get something out of it, and that's community, and that's oneness. Because you want to know something? We're all the same. When it boils down to it, we all come from one God, we're all the same.
It's interesting. It doesn't make any sense, does it, that we're on a rock, floating in space, in the middle of nowhere, and we're all trying to do the same things. We're all trying to find that happiness and that contentment. Now, the other side of this, when we come back for the next segment, which we're going to have next week, I want to talk about and start thinking about it now, fellas. What's the difference between good and evil? And how do they play out in all of our lives? So I think there's a connection to happiness and contentment and good and evil and how that works our way through our lives. So in your life, Jim, have you reached the point of feeling contentment? Are you still striving for things? What's going on?
On occasion. I will. It's a long road. I think it's my lifelong challenge in life is to find contentment. And that contentment, and I've read a lot of books and thought about this a lot, is just being very little expectations, just being happy.
Enjoying where you are.
Just being happy you exist. And yes, Bill, gratitude that you have a conscious, that you are there, and you're part of this big game we're playing in the universe.
Sounds a lot like what you got, doesn't it?
Yes,
it does.
Jill?
Well, I've got a saying that you might like. We need to have an attitude of gratitude. And if we just think about that, we're grateful for what we have. We're grateful for what we've attained. We're grateful for our families, especially. I mean, I've been married going on 42 years. I have never been so blessed in my life in any relationship prior to this one.
How about grateful just to be here doing a show? And I'm happy. I like doing this. How about just being happy? I like Jack, believe it or not.
I don't believe that. I don't like doing the show with Jim. I'll just go on the record.
Bill, did you say you're married 42 years?
Yes.
So what you're saying is that your wife is up for canonization. She's going to make her a saint in the church pretty soon.
I was sick this last few 10 days, and believe me, I've never been more grateful for a woman. I definitely have an attitude of gratitude.
I think that's great. But I think we see, Jack, you said it right at the beginning of this segment. You said, this is a very complex question.
Yeah.
This is not just simply, well, happy means...
Everybody finds satisfaction in different ways. The hardest part has been in my personal journey is to really sit down, go somewhere, to the beach, to the mountains, or whatever, and ask yourself, what is it that really would make me happy? What is it really that would make me content? Mm-hmm. For now, while being a working person in the world, I race. When I'm sitting in the race car after the race is over, whether I've won or whether I've done well or on the motorcycle or what have you, that couple of minutes there that you have to give yourself because of the adrenaline rush, you don't want to talk to anybody, you don't want to see anybody, you just want to sit there, take a moment, calm down, and boy, that is just contentment.
Enjoy the moment.
That is, you know, contentment.
I'm glad that you said that because we're gonna close out this segment here, but I think I had a moment where I think me trying to find contentment after my life of trying to work and build businesses and build, take care of my kids and my family and find my place in God's world. We sat down around the campfire the other night, had a nice cocktail and a cigar, and I was just happy to be there. I wasn't rushing to be anywhere else. I wasn't running to do something else. I didn't feel pulled in 52 different directions. The little Christmas tree on the deck was lit up. The fire was burning. My kids were all around. It was wonderful. I was happy to be there. I felt content.
That contented moment is when you don't want to be anywhere else. Hmm.
Jack, I'm very happy you have such an exhilarating experience about driving race cars, but it's still not a sport.
We'll be back.
Here we go.
Ladies and gentlemen, I have a guest coming up. This is Donna Hernandez, who we've had before, and we're going to talk about her book and what's going on with Donna. But we're going to get back together with the Neighborhood Fellows next week, and we're going to continue these conversations because I think they're important. And I find some happiness and contentment in it, gentlemen. See you then.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
I have a guest today who is a personally good friend of mine, and she is also a tremendous law enforcement officer with a great career. She is a filmmaker, and she is also now a published author of what I think is going to be probably one of the biggest books to come out of the law enforcement world in a very, very long time. So, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to introduce you to my very good friend, Ms. Donna Roman Hernandez. Donna, how are you?
Joe, I'm great.
Thank you very much. Yeah, we're heard actually all across the world, mainly United States, but you know what? We're on the podcast, and from what I'm told, people are picking us up around the world in freedom-loving countries everywhere, and that's what we like in Chasing Justice Land. So, Donna, just...
Well, thank you.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Thank you, Joe, for a couple weeks ago, I guess. It was part of a guest panel on your show, and congratulations on the show. Congratulations on all that you do. Not only to serve our law enforcement community, but our international community.
Well, I appreciate that. I want to remind everybody, you were on with us when we were at Clancy's. We were doing some live spots out of Clancy's, and you joined the neighborhood. Yeah. You came out in the neighborhood, and that was really a lot of fun. So I'm thrilled to have you back again. Donna, why don't you just give everybody a little bit on your background, you know, your law enforcement career, because we have lots of cops that listen in from all over the country.
Thank you, Joe. I served 30 years in law enforcement with both the Essex County Police and the Caldwell Police Department, and I retired at the rank of captain. Before I became a uniformed officer, sworn officer, I was an auxiliary officer a number of years. I worked in the Newark Police Department as in New Jersey as a 911 operator. And so I've had a very eclectic view at law enforcement from a very young age, and throughout the decades as law enforcement has progressively changed.
Yeah, it's really an amazing career that you had. You know, one of the topics that we touch on here once in a while when we talk about law enforcement is the value and the impact that women in law enforcement have had. And I know when you came on, you're talking, you know, you've been retired a couple of years, but you go back 30 years, there were not a lot of women in law enforcement when you came on. So that was kind of a unique position also, correct?
Yes, it was. When I started my career at the Essex County Police, we were four women of approximately nearly 200 law enforcement officers. It was a great learning experience. I was a translator speaking two languages, Spanish speaking and English. And we unfortunately were hit with a horrendous layoff, and all of us dispersed to various police departments. But I definitely enjoyed working with the Essex County Police. When I went to Caldwell, being the first and only female and the first and only Hispanic, I have to say there were some challenges that I had to overcome. But I did, and when it comes down to what we're really supposed to do, and we did, was serve and protect the community.
That's fantastic. Now, it's interesting. I forgot about that, your multilingual skills. I just had a young man reach out to me from the Dominican Republic. He's a police officer down there, and I guess they have like a volunteer set of police officers down there in addition to the national police. And his name is Jetro Antoine, and he wanted to join some organizations for law enforcement. He listens to the show, which I think is great. And I got Jetro in charge or hooked up with the New Jersey Narcotics Enforcement Officers Association as a member. So he's joining a membership there, and he's really a great guy. But he wants to get some of the training that I do down to the DR. But unfortunately, he said some of his leadership only speaks Spanish. We need an interpreter. So I think I got a little job for you here to help me out with.
Anything I can do to help you and Latino officers on it.
That's fantastic. So, Donna, one of the things that I think is really exciting is that, and you've told me in the past your personal story. And first of all, it's an amazing tale that you have to tell. It's scary and it's powerful and it's loving and it's redeeming, and it's your story of surviving domestic violence. And I think that's what your book coming out is all about. Is that correct?
Yes, my book Battered Blue will chronicle over 30 years of abuse, maltreatment. That unfortunately, my father was the batterer. He was a former sheriff's officer, and parts of it touch upon my childhood. And the other parts touch upon how domestic violence festers in a law enforcement family, rather, and is undetected and unreported because of all the fears and things that are attached to that biological connection that I have with my father.
Sure. Well, like I said, it's a very powerful story. And, you know, for all of us listening out here in Chasing Justice Land, I can tell you Donna has told me the story when she was considering, putting it down in book form so that she could share this story to try and help other people understand what she went through and bring this to light. This is a story that will grab you by the throat, literally, and it doesn't let you go. And it's amazing. And you realize, you know, as I was told about, and I realized it was Donna who lived through this, you know, my friend. And it's, you wouldn't think that a law enforcement officer would be involved in these kind of things. But the reality is that domestic violence and these kind of family violence things can happen to anybody. I'm sure within the sound of our voice right now, there are people suffering from the same thing in silence. And they just don't, they don't come forward.
And thank you for saying that, because everything you said is true. And as law enforcement officers, we know that reality because we have responded to and investigated calls and incidents of domestic violence. But I would like to share something with your audience, and I've not done this before, but it's a prelude to my book, which will be published in the spring of 2019. I'd like to just recount an excerpt I've written. Is that all right?
I think that would be great. I think I would love to hear it.
Thank you. I arrived home from college and saw my mother near the stove with a cleaver clutched in her hand. She screamed at my father, "I hate you and I want you dead." My police instincts reacted. I intervened and knocked the cleaver out of her hands. It fell at my feet and I pushed her behind me out of harm's way. Unexpectedly, my father grabbed me by my neck, lifted me off my feet, and banged my torso onto the kitchen table. He straddled me and put his destructive hands around my neck. Our eyes met. His were bulging, and so were mine. He began to strangle me to make good on his promise to end my life. I struggled to breathe and free myself from his grasp. I knew seconds were ticking by. And so was my life.
That's
hard for me to say that. And
I can't imagine.
The nervousness in my voice, because the only way, Joe, that I could and have moved past all these years of what my eyes have visually captured and my heart has been broken into pieces by was to write this book. And yes, it is a memoir, but it also is a guide for any and everyone who has ever heard about domestic violence, knows someone who is a victim, and for victims to realize that they're not alone. And throughout the book, I give some clues and some hints about how they can change their life, because ultimately, only each individual victim knows when it's time to leave and how they should leave, because leaving is the most lethal time throughout the victimization.
Right. I think that's always true, and you've told me that, but I think, you know, in law enforcement, we know that. When the victim finally makes that decision to get out, that is dangerous, because that really threatens the abuser in multiple ways, and that's a lot of times where the attacks become more fierce and they become deadly.
Absolutely. I've had some dark moments. So going back in time, because it's triggered. It's natural for a victim to be triggered
by trauma.
Something that they've seen or something that they've experienced. So I wasn't dragging my feet, as my publisher thought, on the book. It was just very difficult to tell the whole truth. I've expressed it to you a number of times when we had conversations. I will tell parts of my life, but to tell the whole story, that was a difficult task. From start to finish of the book.
I'm sure to lay open and bare for everyone to see all that pain that you had to endure, the fear, the embarrassment, the whole nine yards, everything, every human emotion had to be involved in there. And when you told me that, how hard that was for you, you know, because I didn't experience that. So I remember when you were telling me, I'm saying, well, if this happened to you and you're a cop and you survived it, just tell the story. And then you realize that there are many, many levels in a human being. And some of those, I'm sure you tucked down over the years to survive them, to get rid of them, to move on. And I think, are you saying that this is a healing type of a thing, writing this book?
It's healing now, but not during the writing process.
Sure.
I wanted to hide so many things. There were drafts and redrafts and things taken out and other things put in, because with victimization, the triggers cause memories from years past held secrets to come forward, and I'm writing about it.
Sure.
It's as if I'm betraying a family trust, and I know that sounds ridiculous because my family betrayed me. But as there's a child victim inside of me that wants to speak loud and forceful, but there's the adult ex-law enforcement officer who is ashamed and embarrassed and didn't tell her story because she felt, meaning me, that my brethren officers would not understand how I could be one way as a cop, but yet be so accommodating and fearful as a victim survivor. It's always walked that tightrope, somewhat of a double life, by not being truthful to myself.
And you know, I think when I hear you say that, Donna, that seems so clear to me, because people sometimes get confused with who cops are. Cops are human beings; they're people. And we get trained to go into these situations that are dangerous, that are scary, that are emotionally damaging. And you look how many police officers commit suicide. And you and I know, we've talked about this. I've written about this. It's because the things that we see, if we don't find a way to vent them, if we don't get them out of our soul, they're like a cancer that eats away at people. And I can imagine that having to live through a thing like this has to be somewhat like that, that it has to be that painful, that you are a police officer, but you're a human being first. And this happened to you. This is a trauma that happened to you as a child, as a young adult, and as a grown woman police officer. So all of those things really hide themselves underneath the reality of being a person. And a cop is what we do. You're a human being. And it's amazing that you could write this down for everyone, because I know there are people listening right now that are on both sides of that book. There are some people out there that are victimized, that are going to read your book, that are going to gain strength from it, that maybe they'll be able to get away, save their lives, and make their lives better. And there's also people out there that are listening that are abusers. And if you're a coward and you're abusing anybody in your life, you really need to take a hard look at what you're doing. Because listen to the words that Donna is talking about. This is what you're causing, the pain you're causing to your family, to your loved ones, to people you say you care about, and you're out there doing this. And this is not a simple problem. This is ingrained in who we are as people. So I think your book is going to help a lot of people, Donna.
Thank you, Joe, and thank you for what you're saying. Because there are many layers to victimization and many cultural and religious and ramifications about speaking out about it. My father's mother abused him. My mother watched my grandmother being degraded and demoralized by my grandfather. There's cultural, there's generational domestic violence in many families, including mine. And we are now in 2018. There are many more resources, advocacy groups, social media. There are many more places where victims can find solace or friendship or instruction, guidelines, how to get away from that relationship through safety planning and trainings that are available, but that both you and I are now collaborating on. And my advocacy has run parallel with my victimization, because those advocates who kept my secret quiet were often networking for me and empowering me to make the right decisions, not only for me, but for my mother, who was also a silent victim, who unfortunately died from complications of mental and physical health issues at the age of 73, related to alcoholism and drug dependency because of her silence and endurance of all the domestic violence that she endured since a year after her marriage. Right. So it is a tale of tragedy. But right now, the only thing I can do that's within my power is to effectuate change for others and to keep evolving and changing in my life, because mental wellness is so important for anyone to persevere in life.
Yep. Well, Donna, you're a superstar, and like I said, this book is going to be tremendous. I know you mentioned some of the training, and for the audience out there, and you know that my company, True Security Design, Pangaro Training, we train law enforcement, schools, business people on safety, security topics, all kinds of investigative things. Donna Hernandez is going to be joining us at True Security Design as one of our associates, and she's going to be presenting some very powerful training courses. Donna, we have about a minute, so can you just kind of, I know it's not a lot of time, but can you just kind of give us an idea of the programs you're going to be bringing to TSD?
Well, the one that's been trending and been very popular and well-received is the one for law enforcement officers and for advocates as well, is that children exposed to the trauma of domestic violence and effective police response. Police officers are the first on the scene. They're the first to diagnose issues, recognize symptoms, and this training is geared towards recognizing it, getting help for victims and families, and to create a bond between law enforcement and community to defuse and to start eliminating these patterns of domestic violence in the home setting, especially with children being exposed to it. That's one of the ones that really has been making an effective move within the communities and police.
And I think that's really great, and we're thrilled at True Security Design to have you come aboard with us to bring your experience, your knowledge, your ability. You're a master trainer. So we're going to be putting these classes out initially in Connecticut, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, New York. But from there, we are available anywhere within the sound of my voice. If you wanted this training, we could get Donna to you for your police department, your prosecutor's office, your community, whatever. It's truesecuritydesign.com. You can go there, and we'll have Donna up on the website probably sometime early next week. Now, Donna, we only have a couple seconds left. Where can we find this book? When's it coming out, and how do we get it?
Well, it's in the publisher's hands, and as you know, you're a published author. It could be 2 months or 3 months, so I will keep you in the loop about it so you can, you know, let your listening audience know. But we're anticipating the spring of 2019, and then we will be going on a No Excuse for Abuse tour wherever and anywhere we're asked to show up to promote not only positive attitudes and help for victims of domestic violence, but also to get the word out there that there's no excuse for abuse at any level.
I love that. Donna, thank you very much for being on with us today here on Chasing Justice. When I hear exactly where we can pick up a copy of that book, ladies and gentlemen, we will bring it out to you. We'll have Donna back on again when the book comes out to talk about it some more. And I'm sure we'll stick it up on our website so that you can reach out and grab a copy and save your life or save someone else's life.